You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 86, The End of Google as We Know It. This is the part of the show where we now transition into complete Google fanboyism.
Woo!
I'm not sure we're quite there yet, but we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Because Google had their Google I.O. conference this week, which is similar to Apple's WWDC type of thing.
Right.
You know, and they had a keynote that lasted about 3 hours.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh. It was, so I couldn't watch the entire thing because I actually had like a meeting, two meetings during that time.
Right.
But that didn't stop me from watching it the entire time.
Right.
I just got to listen to like an hour and a half, 2 hours of it. So I'd love to run through some of the things that they talked about and just kind of share them with you and get your opinion, and I'll share my opinion, and because there was just a ton there. And I guess my very first reaction is, like, I hear about the stuff that they're doing, and you do get kind of excited, and you go, oh, this could be awesome.
Right.
And it's really just a matter of executing on some of this stuff, and that's part of my, like, man, is Apple going to be the future, or is it Google? Because we've talked about in the past where they're both headed down the same course, and it was like Apple's awesome at hardware, Google's awesome at software, and the question was, who's going to adapt faster to what the other person is, to what the other company is doing?
And the answer is Samsung.
And honestly, it's like it's Samsung and Google are doing it together, and you know, and so when you start to, you know, when you start to combine those, you're like, wow, geez, come on, Apple, pick up the software side, because it's becoming very apparent that, you know, it used to be just an obvious, well, your hardware is so much better, and we'll use some of Google's software that, you know, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, we can make up for some of your software down, you know, shortcomings. And now it's kind of like, well, it's still better hardware, but it's not like clearly, obviously, head and shoulders better.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of like, no, they've got some cool features too. It's not as good of a build, but they've got some cool features that integrates with the software, which is better. And so, you know, it's just like one of those, it's whatever. It is what it is. For now, Apple do their WWDC, and then we'll get to really decide when I like buy a new phone 2 years from now, but whatever. Anyways, Google did a ton of stuff. I saw that you specifically called out two.
Yeah.
If you want to start with those, we can, and then I can head into everything else, or, you know.
The two that I saw that caught my attention was, number one, they announced they're going to make their own Spotify clone, and they're expanding their Google Music service, where now they're going to be streaming music for $9.99 a month, which is it's just Spotify, but with the Google brand on it, and it probably plays really nice with your Google Music if you already got that all up in the storage cloud and whatnot, which is interesting because it's just it's one of those things where it's not aggressively priced, it's not aggressively positioned, it just is, and I think it's specifically the idea that, you know, if we offer a competitive product and you're already fully invested in our ecosystem, then you'll just gradually move over to ours, and they're willing to play the waiting game on it. They don't have any, you know, it's just one of those things where they throw it out there so that people will slowly start using it. Now the real question is, when are they going to kill the service? Burn. But yeah, it's an interesting serve, you know, it's what's fascinating to me is it is just a clone. There's nothing aggressive and about it. It's not, you know, it's not like the Apple strategy where they charge more, but they try to give you more. It's not the Amazon strategy where they try to charge less and give you less. No, they're giving you the exact same thing for the same price. Like, okay, thanks guys. And yeah. And the other question that a lot of people are asking is like, okay, when do they come out with a Netflix clone? Like, you know, when do they start charging for, you know, make a subscription-based YouTube channel? Or not channel, but a, you know, service where you do all your movies and TV shows. And
well, they are starting to work on subscription-based YouTube channels, so.
Right, and I think that that's just a matter of time before they get to the point where it, you either have a Netflix clone straight up or a Netflix, or, you know, or streaming TV movie services. So, but, you know, that's clearly the direction they're moving. And then the other thing is,
I guess I get it. You know, they've got all these software and they're starting to get into hardware. And so it makes sense to get into the content management and, you know, yeah, side of the house. And they clearly don't want to completely replicate iTunes. And part of it's because they don't think that's the future. They think it is going to be streaming services. But I do see where they're, you know, like, yeah, let's do music and books and movies and apps and, you know what I mean? Let's just do all those different content plays so we have them and there are no excuses. You don't have to try to figure out what you're going to do with iTunes and how you're going to get your music in on there and how you're going to manage it. Well, don't worry about it. Right. It's all in the cloud.
Right. I'd say, and the one thing that I get, and the reason why I think about Spotify probably once a week about getting it on, you know, paying for the service. And I always decide, not to, because I just remember the fact that I have a data cap and it's the 19th. Our cycle ends on the 26th and I've already gotten an alert. Hey, by the way, you're running out of data. I were to stream music, like I'd be done already, like, because I listen to a lot of music and I would just stream all the time.
And yeah, but you can't. So, and that's what you like about iTunes Match, right? Is it, in some ways it's streaming, but in a lot it's like, no, download these ones. Okay.
Right. You can stream the music, but I just always download the song. If I want to listen to it, I'll download it, whatever. Yeah. And I can do that, you know, and if I have an ounce of patience, I'll wait till I'm in Wi-Fi, but I usually don't have an ounce of patience because LTE is like almost always, I have the worst Wi-Fi network in the world. Like all the different Wi-Fi hotspots that I go to are super slow. So LTE is always like 8 times faster. So sometimes, like when I'm at work, because I get like 1 megabyte, 1.5 megabytes over Wi-Fi, I'll like walk outside or I'll just like turn off the Wi-Fi so it kicks over to LTE so I can download songs because it goes faster. But I sit there and I go, to me, that's the biggest struggle with all of those services is if you don't have unlimited data, you're cruising for a bruising. If you listen to any quantity of music, but a lot of people seem to be fine with it. So I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do with that.
So you're not signing up, but you're interested. I gotcha.
Yeah, and you
technically
know,
just, all of my music's up in the Google Music Cloud somewhere. I've uploaded it all.
Weeks. Yeah. Takes forever. You know what I gotta do? I gotta go to one of my local universities and just jack into the one of the community colleges and go into the labs and just jack directly into the
landline.
The landline, because I can pull like 120 down and like I can get like 80 up. Megabyte, which is just sweet. It's fast, especially, and you just got to go at like 9 o'clock at night because you get the entire power of the router. There's like 4 guys that's pulling all the bandwidth of the entire school. Like during the day when everybody's there on Wi-Fi and everything, you can barely pull like 5 or 6, but at night it's insane the amount of bandwidth that you can get for free. Yay.
Yeah.
I downloaded the entire StarCraft, the original StarCraft, in like, it was stupid. It was like 8 minutes.
Nice.
But, yeah, I'll have to do that, I guess.
Okay. Interesting. So that was one thing they did talk about. They also talked about the end of search as we know it.
So they're getting rid of Google.com. Yay! It's already gone. They deleted it. So now you just have to search.
The page.
Yeah, you used to search the new way. All it is a Google Doodle at this point.
That's it.
Yeah. No, it's not quite true. I hate titles or proclamations like this. It's the end of search as you know it.
That's what they said. They said it right there in the conference.
I know. It is like that's the quote. It's the end of search as you know it. But the thing is that anybody that has a cell phone that's been produced in the last 2 years uses all of these features already. Like, I don't get what the big deal is. Like, especially with Siri. Like,
they announced three different pieces to it, correct?
Right. So one of the big things was they're making improvements to the knowledge graph. Mm-hmm. Specifically, they're going to try to add information. You know, the knowledge graph is pretty cool right now because it's like, let's say you want to know how old is this one actress. That's a really creepy question now that it's out of my mouth.
Got anybody in mind?
not specifically. But you want to know about, like, let's say you want to know you want to know information about a person. So you type in that information and the knowledge graph comes up and it tells you, like, who they are, what they're known for, their age, where they were born. They basically give you the Wikipedia page information on the sidebar, which is nice if you're looking, and they give you some pictures. So now the improvement to that is now it's going to try to figure out when people ask information about this. You know, they can kind of follow the order of what's your next search, what things do you look at. What they're going to try to do is figure out generally, if you're asking, like, for example, what's the population of India, usually people then text or ask what's the population of Pakistan and what's the population of, so they get the rest of the subcontinent because they're comparing different stuff. And so the knowledge graph, the first thing it'll come up with is the population of India, and the rest of the information will be the population of Pakistan and the population of the rest of the subcontinent, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Because what it's doing is it's trying to, it's helping you sort out through that, information quicker. So that's one of the big things where it's, that's cool. The next one is, once again, I don't understand how this is, like, revolutionary at all. In that every smartphone has had this. Okay. So basically,
it's kind of cool to be able to just have your browser open and go, okay, Google. And then what happens is it goes.
That is so much better than having to click on the little mic button in order to ask Google questions on the Google search bar. I mean, like, I don't Google anything anymore. Sometimes I do. But, I almost always voice question Google things.
Really?
And because the Google search bar has it. I do, or I, if I have my iPhone, I ask Siri, Google this for me. And if I, if I'm on Google, I use the Google,
realize you were so cool.
Oh, I'm awesome.
I never use it.
Yeah, see, I've made it a point to get in the habit of this stuff because you know what it is? Is it's so much easier when you don't have to spell anything. Life is just, everything is spelled right all the time. Which it used to not be the case with, like, voice recognition, but voice recognition is more accurate than my spelling. And my spelling has made leaps and bounds of improvement over the last, 10 years. So I'm kind of impressed by it. It is cool. They're basically doing the Google Glass deal now where it's, like you said, you go, okay, Google, search this, which I'll get that. I'm full on. I'm not downplaying this technology. What I'm, not saying this is stupid, I won't use it. What I'm saying is I already use 98% of this. How is this revolutionizing search? But whatever. Cool, Google. Thanks for that.
And then finally, the last one is Google Now, which is the idea of it guesses what you need to know ahead of time, which we've talked about Google Now. It's the assistant card stuff that just gives you information, and they're going to be bringing that to your browser as well for search stuff. So they'll kind of know what you're looking for before you're looking for it.
Right. Which is cool. I mean, it's what they're all are is they're iterative improvements. And technically, yes, this Google search functions weren't there before. So this is a new Google search. It's not what we knew before. What we knew before will be this new 2-3% improvement. So what we knew will be going away. It's the end of what we knew. It's still mostly that, but I feel like they're really trumping it up, and it's like, dude, you guys have like pioneered all these other all these technologies on other platforms. Like, thanks. I don't know. It seems very. People make that criticism of Apple all the time. Like, you act like you walk up there and act like you're revolutionizing everything when you're not at all. Like, you're just implementing your technology into your other product lines. Which is great. I appreciate it, but just such a verbose rhetoric.
Okay. All right. Another thing that they talked about was Google Play for Education.
All right. Which
I thought was actually kind of interesting. Essentially, they're coming out with a education-focused store on their Google Play store, where they have a bunch of educational apps, and you can sort them by age range and subject matter. Nice. And then it'll filter out, here's the apps, which they've actually had like an independent board or something, you know, of educators review and look at and go, yeah, these are good apps. And, you know, it's going to be both paid and free and whatever. Because they said that they were talking with teachers and they were saying it was just the app discovery was super, super hard to do.
Yeah.
And so they've essentially made it really a lot better. To enable you to filter to the appropriate age category and subject matter. And I saw this, and I was like, oh, boy, that's pretty awesome. That almost makes me want to get a Nexus tablet if we have kids, just to have access to that kind of stuff and then see if there's an iOS equivalent. And but anyways, it's just like they're doing it. And then they were talking about how they're trying to get more tablets into the classroom and make them more affordable and stuff like that. But it was just very interesting that they are definitely going after the education space, which historically has been ruled by Apple.
Right.
And, you know, they're going, no, we're going to figure out a way to make it easier. Which I was like, can we do app discovery like that for everything? Do we have to do it just for education? Because that sounds really helpful.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I know we do genres and I can search by tags, but really there's a better way to do this. We all know it. We can all feel it. We just need to figure it out.
Well, somebody needs to be the Google search of app discovery, and you'd think Google would be like primed to be that thing. Since they were the Google of Googling before anybody else. But this is a tougher nut to crack than anybody wants to admit, because I don't know why. I actually have no idea why. I think it has to do with the fact that it's like, it's not like web pages where you can just go and quickly click on stuff, but yeah, like you said, what it is it's a curated collection, and that's like more than anything that's a strong, this goes back to what I was saying earlier, where, you know, what we liked about Apple was that there was a relationship, that it has relationships with other companies, but it was a very regulated, controlled relationship. It allowed third-party apps to come on, but it was a very regulated, controlled process. Mm-hmm. And it allowed third-party people to play with you, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't offer malicious software. And it allowed you to get, you know, other creative forces going on, and everybody profited from it. Well, Google is, you know, finally starting to realize that if they become a little less open and a little more, at least with a few different areas, they clamp it down a little bit and say, this is a protected area. This is a protected bubble. There's going to be good software in here. You can trust it and it's curated. Still open.
Teachers just don't have time to do app discovery and that kind of stuff. They just want to teach the kids.
I hope Google is going to learn from this that, you know, if we do that with games, And if we do that with business things, and if we do that, and slowly the Google Play Store becomes this highly regulated place where, yeah, you can easily go to any other store on the web and you can download any apps that you want and you don't have to have the regulation in the app discovery, but it's the curation process that's difficult. And, you know, and hopefully that they, what they find is that, you know, by going this route, and then having everything automatically curated using their impressive algorithms, you know, it'll slowly start to move it in that direction. And then, you know, and then it just becomes a matter of time before they start indexing, you know, every app, and, you know, Apple has to get on board with it all. And, mm-hmm. you know, well, that's a good direction. I like that. That's that, you know, as, I mean, it's as big of a deal that is for the classroom. I think the bigger deal, like you said, is the app discovery process, that it's, you know, it's another step in the direction of a more secure and reliable app store for Google.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is cool.
Yeah.